The topic this morning for our teaching is one that you will not, you won't get from Jonathan and Lorana. They're not going to touch this. In fact, even if I had said to them ahead of time, hey, here's what we're going to teach on today, Jonathan would have said, Mike, I don't know. I think I'd rather you not do that. That's good, huh? That's good. And it continues on our theme of love. So if you're a teenager, we're not talking about sex, sorry, all right? But it is something that very, very rarely do we ever teach or talk about in the church, in a gathering like this. So I thought, you know what, I'm going to do it. I'm going to grab the third rail, and if I get fried, I'll go home with you, all right? It'll be nice and home where it's warm. Love is a living, breathing dynamic in our lives, and as you felt through the worship and music this morning and then in Jonathan's exhortation to us, it really is the lifeblood of a Christian's relationship with God and his people. Where there is a lack of love, whatever you have left over is worthless. It really is. Even if they're noble and of great character. The greatest of all things is what? Love. The greatest commandment is to love. And it is a living, breathing thing. Let me give you an example, though. You're going to experience this right now, of what happens when we get out of balance in our love relationship with others, okay? Everybody in here knows how to breathe, I'm assuming. I don't think I have to ask that, except for that guy in the back laying down. I'm not sure about him, but everybody else, all right? Here's what I want you to do. I just want you to take a normal breath in, hold it for 2 seconds. All right, let it out. All right, that's healthy. That's healthy, right? And you know from your science class, when you took that breath in, what were you taking in? Can't live without it. Got to have that oxygen, right? More the better, right? All right, well, let's do it then. More the better. I want you to follow my directions carefully, all right? I'll tell you ahead of time what we're going to do, and then as we do it, I want you to follow through. We're going to go ahead and breathe in some, don't do it yet. We're going to breathe in some oxygen. We're going to hold it for 2 seconds, but we're not going to let it out. Just follow my directions after that, okay? All right, here we go. Ready? Everybody take a breath in. Hold it 2 seconds. One, two. Take another breath in. Hold it 2 seconds. One, two. Take another breath in. Uh-oh. They're already dying on us. Oh, no. Okay, let it out. Let it out. For the rest of you, let it out. We have some very compliant people here. They're like turning red. Okay, is that enough? That's good. Taking a breath is good, yes? And also exhaling is good, yes? What happens if you take breaths in, which, we need oxygen to live. What happens if you keep taking breaths in, but you don't ever go back out? What happens? You die. Yeah. You stop breathing. You pass out, conk your head on the ground, and there's nothing we can do for you. Well, there is, but if you're silly enough not to exhale, we're not going to worry about you, all right? Breathing in and then breathing out it's the rhythm that keeps us, and there's a rhythm to love. And there are times when we need to soak in the goodness of God. We need to be in his presence and experience the glories of praising him and how his loving kindness and his compassion just overflow and pour out upon us. And we're like a sponge just soaking it all in. And that's the inhaling. It's very necessary. But if all we do is continue to take it in, like that sponge, we just sit there and we soak it in and we begin to sour. If we don't exhale, and all we do is inhale, we become a warped, twisted, just all-consuming black hole of greed for what feels good, rather than a conduit for God to blast us with his love so that in turn it can be transferred onto others as we exhale and pass it on. That's his design. That is his design. And when in balance, it feels good. It feels good. You know, you take a breath in, especially, you know, in about 3 or 4 minutes, I'm going to be boring, and some of you are going to go, and that's going to feel good. But imagine taking that big breath in and not exhaling, and then doing it again. It becomes extremely uncomfortable, doesn't it? And we had some people coughing and gagging. That's uncomfortable. And you know, in our Christian life, we can cough and gag around people. And when we do it, we sometimes think, I need more love, when actually we need to be extending more love. All right, you follow me? Okay? So today, that's our topic. Before I kind of laser in the focus of why you're not going to talk about this, okay? I want to reflect back on a song. That was about 40 years ago. Paul Simon wrote this song, 50 Ways to Leave Your Lover. How many remember that song? It rung true with me because before I met Kathleen, my wife, I had 5 girlfriends, and all 5 of them dumped me. I have never broken up with anybody in my entire life. I've only been on the receiving end of that sledgehammer. When they look you in the eye and say, can we just be friends? You know, and they pluck your heart out and drop it to the ground. And so I remember when that song came out, that was like, you remember that one? You know, slip out the back, Jack, make a new plan, stand. Oh, you know it. You know it. Don't need to be coy. Just listen to me. That's right. Hop on the bus. Don't need to discuss much. Just drop off the key and get yourself free. Oh, yeah, that was classic. That was classic, man. I don't ever remember the verses, but that chorus is still in my head. You know, my grandson Jeremiah and I, we were singing it this morning, you know, and he's like, oh, I like that, Grandpa. Sing that again. It's just a great, great tune. You know, so you got, you know, anyway, I don't want that to be stuck in your head too long. 50 ways to leave your lover. That's not the type of love I want to talk about today, but I do want to borrow from him. And I want to, if Jonathan had to preach this sermon, he would call it the biblical imperatives for the believer regarding ecclesiastical leadership. Because if he uses all those words, then he can say this stuff, and you don't know what he's saying, and he can get away with it, see? But really what he means 50 ways to love your pastor. That's what he would talk about. Now, I don't have time to give you all 50, and I can make a list of 100, but I want this morning to take a quick look at Scripture at how we can find balance in our love relationship with God and one another, specifically in the area of how do you love a pastor? And if I could be so bold, how do you love our pastors? It's not quite as simple as it looks at first, because we all have a tendency when we get into the presence of a pastor to inhale, to take it in, to ask for something that we can receive. And we forget that there needs to be a balance in those relationships where we also exhale. Now, I can tell you as a pastor that there are a lot of believers that I don't want exhaling around me. Bad breath. Bad breath. Almost as if the devil himself crawled up inside you and died, you know? So some of you probably do a little too much exhaling. Mouthwash, brushing your teeth, those things, good diet, those are important, and being able to let the right stuff out. But how do you love your pastor? 50 ways to love your pastor. And I'm going to try to get through as many as I can in about 20 minutes, and I'm stopping. And whatever I'm on, that's it, I'm done. Because I'm not the Tasmanian preacher going to keep you here until 3 in the afternoon. I'm not going to do that, all right? So we'll hop around through some scriptures, follow along with me. Hebrews 13:17 is where I want to start to kind of lay the foundation for you and I. I don't think I'm going to say much today that is a new thought to you. I just hope that I give you something that is a practical challenge to you to apply to your love life. The greatest commandment is to love the Lord thy God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. What's the second greatest commandment? That you love your neighbor. That you love your neighbor. Yeah. Hebrews 13:17. Obey your leaders and submit to them, for they keep watch over your souls as those who will give an account. And let them do this with joy and not with grief, for this would be unprofitable for you. And I want to show you a couple things in this verse that maybe don't always click in your mind, but are ever present, never ceasing in the heart and the mind of a pastor. Obey your leaders, submit to them. Why? Because they keep watch over your souls. If you've never been commissioned with that responsibility, it is an awesome, burdensome, sacred responsibility. Any parent understands this. Any grandparent understands the compassion of the heart that goes with this. And a pastor is saddled with that responsibility that is different than anybody else's. Anybody else's. They watch over your souls as those who will what? They're going to give an account. If you were to take a class at college and the professor said before the class even started, I don't care whether you're taking this for credit or not, everybody in here has an A. I don't care about your grades, so you get an A. Now, you'd have a different experience in that class than if the professor was well known to be one who nobody ever gets an A from. Tough grader. Half his students fail the class. And you're going to have to claw and scratch and burn the midnight oil just to get an average C grade in their class. Your experience in that class would be different than the automatic A, would it not? When a pastor oversees a flock, he clearly understands that it's not a token, do whatever you want. I'll say, well done, good and faithful servant. Just do whatever you want. It doesn't work that way. There is strict accountability. And not just in the here and now, but especially in eternity. I'll be honest with you. Most of us, in the daily grind of our occupations, most of us do not face very many decisions in which the eternal consequences of lives hang in the balance. And that's an everyday, sometimes every moment experience for the shepherd of a church. They operate with a different sense of accountability, responsibility, and I dare say perspective on things. They can't afford to be short-sighted. They can't afford to be in the moment, because they know their grades are based on what matters 100 years from now, not tomorrow. Very different perspective. And if they're unable to do that, then they are not worthy to be a pastor. And they will not get a passing grade. So when we're asked to obey or to submit, we're asked to do it to those who have taken on something that until you have taken that on, you really don't understand the gravity of the process and the decisions. You go to Walmart, you push your cart, you go down an aisle, you grab a bag of chips. They're on sale 2 for 1, so you get 2. And before you can get to the check stand, they got those just ungodly prices on ice cream where you can get like a gallon and a half for 20 cents. So you grab one of those, you know, and as you're waiting to go in, they got the Snicker bars and stuff, so you throw that in there. And somebody from church sees you and you wave and you chat. You talk about, you know, Wasco High basketball's great boys team, you know, you get into stuff. And then you go out to your car, you put it away, and nothing happens. But if that's your pastor, I mean, it's on social media before you're even out to the car. Hey, guess what they're eating? All this talk about holiness, yeah. We're going to call him 10-gallon ice cream Rhodes. And all of a sudden, there's a certain type of judgment that's passed on what for everybody else is just normal, regular, routine stuff. Every day, every minute. And unfortunately, it's not just for the pastor, but it's for the entire family. And it never lets up. It never takes a vacation. Never has a holiday. Those expectations are nonstop. That is the burden that comes with the obedient heart that says, I will shepherd your flock. I'm willing to be held accountable. And along the way, I may suffer some hardships. And it is what we do in our minds and in our conversations and our reactions to things that oftentimes become the biggest burden for a pastor. And if you don't know that, I'm sorry to pop your bubble, but that's the truth. This verse uses a very interesting word. The first word there, obey. If we really translated that accurately, literally, it would be the word be persuadable. That's what that word means, and we get the word obey from it. Be persuadable by your leaders. Don't be argumentative. Don't be stubborn. Don't be a know-it-all. Be before them in a way where you say, I want to be taught. I want to learn. I want to be led. I want to be persuaded by truth. I want to be persuaded by the Spirit of God. I want to be changed. I want to be transformed. If you believe that your spiritual gift is making sure that the pastor doesn't get too proud, you got a problem. I had a man once tell me that one time. He says, you know, my gift is just to keep you humble. Oh, boy. Thank you very much. Love to have you. There's another church down the street, by the way. They're looking for someone with your exact gift if you want to write you a prescription and, you know, be persuadable. And why? What is in it for you and I? Remember, love is inhaling and exhaling. There's a give and take. There's a sacrifice, and then there's a blessing. There's obedience, and then there's the grace gift that follows afterward. Look at what the writer of Hebrews says. When you obey and submit, then these who watch over your soul, they'll be able to do this with joy and not with grief, because that would be unprofitable for you. If your pastor, when he sees you coming, never tells you this, but in his heart, in his mind, says, oh no, that's not really profitable for you. If he leads you with joy, that's wonderful. If he leads you with grief, that's not wonderful. Now let me be crystal clear. Every pastor is a person, just like you. And they're going to have friends, just like you. And some of them are going to be closer than other friends, just like you have some that are closer than others, right? Right? So stop being offended if you're not one of the closest friends of the pastor. I would love to be his closest friend. He would make me young or kill me, one or the other. And they're both good options. They're both good options. But he has his life, I have my life, and we love one another. And the time we spend together, we love. But we're never going to be best friends. That's too bad. You don't know what you're missing. But I've got my close friends, and so do you. And even though a pastor is willing to say, I'm working for eternity, and I measure things based on the accountability and the grades I'm getting, I still live in this earth suit. I still have the same physical needs that everybody else does. And I can't be all things to all men. I can't. And a way we love our pastor is by accepting them for who they are. You know, he stood up here a few minutes ago, and he said, you know, none of us are perfect, including me. That's what he said, right? Most of us in here were like, yes, that's true. And there were a few who were saying, so then what have you done lately now? What are you talking about now? There's that critical, judgmental, that's not how we love our pastor. When you come to him and you've fallen short, what do you expect? Yeah. So when he falls short, take it in, give it out. Breathe in, exhale. And for those of you who say, yeah, but he's the pastor. Who's the head of the church? Jesus Christ. He's the head of the body. And all the rest of us are various pieces working individually according to our call, according to God's design. And when you bow your head to pray, and your pastor bows his head to pray, which prayer meets the throne of God first? Which one has priority status? It's a tie, isn't it? We serve a great God who is no respecter of persons. And so you say, well, I'm not sure I really could do that to a pastor. He's a person. She's a person, just like you. You just have to learn how to love. Christmas morning, husband gives a wife a present. She excitedly opens it up, you know, a nice big box, takes the bow off, wrapping paper. And there's a moment of awkward silence when she sees that the box says, you know, 180-volt cordless power drill. And she's like, no, he just put my gift inside this box. And she opens the box, and it's a 180-volt power drill. And husband says to wife, Merry Christmas, I love you. How's that going to go over? Wait, you didn't open your stocking. And gives her the stocking. There's 3 spare batteries in here. Or maybe you make the, I never made that mistake. I have done the, hey, honey, I got you a new vacuum cleaner for your birthday. How does that, doesn't work out well, does it? You know, usually we, 911 calls are moments away from happening. Knowing how to love somebody in a way where it meets their need is critical in any relationship. And in a relationship with a pastor, whether they are not only a pastor but a close friend, whether they are not only a pastor but a family member, whether they are a pastor and an acquaintance that you only speak on Sunday every other week, or possibly even they're your pastor and your enemy. Because unfortunately, there are a few who hold that stance. It doesn't matter. We all have the same call. Love God. And the secondly, what? Love one another. And you come walking into a pastor's life and you offer a gift like a husband would give a power drill to his wife. That just doesn't, it's just not going to work. It's not going to work. Doesn't matter how great you think that power drill is. Doesn't matter how much you need that power drill. Because it's not about you. It's not about you. It isn't. In fact, if you, inside that power drill box, now if you had a coupon for every day of the year, 365 of them that said, I'll do the dishes today. Now that's love. In fact, that might lead to love on multiple planes. Because now you're meeting the need, right? So how do we love? We have to understand that a pastor's responsibilities are a little different. And so we might be related to a little different by him than anybody else. But they're still the same. They're still human. So what do we do? Let me look at a real quickly here. A few lists I'm going to throw at you quickly. I've laid the foundation. It's not my intention to offend anybody. I can tell you right now, I'm not going to do it, but I can tell you right now, if I ask Jonathan and LaRonna to come up here and ask them to give you a grade on how you have loved them, they both would give the entire congregation an A. Now, I'm not saying that they're honest. I'm just saying that's the grade they would give you. All right? So I'm not up here to grind an axe or anything like that. I'm just here to say that I know I can be a better lover. I can. As a husband, as a father, as a grandfather, as a parishioner, as a teacher, as a coach, as a neighbor, I can be a better lover, and so can you. And so I'm not looking to offend you, but let's take a look at some practical things. I just got home from the ER room. Well, about 3 o'clock this morning, Jonathan, my son and I took my grandson, because he went a couple rounds with our coffee table, and the coffee table won. And so we're sitting there going through the things that fathers and grandfathers go through. And part of the love was just waiting and being there and letting my grandson be him. When they came in to do the stitches and the glue on the eyes and all that kind of stuff they're doing, and hold him down, you know. Yeah, you grab a slippery bar of wet soap and see how you do with that, right? And in that moment, what was love? Oh, it was firm. It was strong. It was doing things that I hated doing. 2 hours earlier, we were watching E.T. Remember the movie? You know, we're having fun, and, you know, E.T. phone home, and we're giggling and laughing and bouncing around. And that was love, too. And I have seen E.T. too many times. But I watched it with joy, because that was love. Love has its seasons and its moments, and it's different, even where we're at and what's needed. You follow me? So I want to be careful here as I go through real quick a list of things that the New Testament suggests for where you are at in your moment and in your personality and your temperament and your gifts and your position and your relationship with others. These things can mean different things. Some might be on the inhale, some might be on the exhale. But I just want to make sure I get this point across. If all you ever do is inhale, that's not love. That's suicide. You're going to kill your relationship with God. It's the only time you ever come to church. It's just to take in, take in, take in, take in, worship, me, 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 feel good. You're just going to sit soaking sour. There has to be that balance, especially in a relationship with spiritual leadership. If all you believe a spiritual leader is good for is to make you feel better and to constantly give to you, that relationship is going to go bad. It's going to go bad. So, how can we love our pastor? Let's look at 2 Corinthians chapter 11. Real quick, this is interesting. Paul's in the middle of an argument with the Corinthian church, talking about his credibility, and there are people who are competing, trying to get the hearts of the church at Corinth. And so Paul asks of them, are these people competing? Are they servants of Christ? I speak now as if I'm insane because I'm about to say things that I can't believe I'm saying out loud, but I'm going to say them anyway. If they're servants of Christ, then even more so myself. I have been in far more labors, far more imprisonments, beaten times without number, often in danger of death. 5 times I received from the Jews 39 lashes. 3 times I was beaten with rods. Once I was stoned. That does not mean, okay. 3 times I was shipwrecked. A night and a day I've spent in the deep. I've been on frequent journeys in dangers from rivers, in dangers from robbers, in dangers from my countrymen, in dangers from the Gentiles, in dangers in the city, in the wilderness, on the sea, and even among the false brethren. I've been in labor and in hardship, and through many sleepless nights, in hunger and thirst, often without food, in cold and exposure. These have been some of the occupational hazards of being a spiritual leader, of being a pastor. I didn't ask for them, but they came with the territory. And you might not know it, but that one day that you called me and said, hey, I just need 5 minutes. And I said, sorry, I don't have time. I was on the 23rd lash. Still had 16 to go. Sorry I cut our conversation short, but I had something else that was burdening me. A pastor sits in the office and rejoices with those who rejoice and grieves with those who grieve. Gets in their car and goes to the hospital and visits the family who's so excited about the birth of their firstborn child. And gets on the elevator and goes one floor lower and stands over the bed of a family about to grieve the loss of a loved one. And the emotions of being human are stretched really beyond what's possible. And beside all of that, Paul says in verse 28, apart from all these external things, there is the daily pressure on me of the concern for all the churches. Yes, there's budgets and there's programs, there's meetings and there's committees, and there's all sorts of administrative responsibilities and structures and all those things, and those just take it out of you. There's never end to it. There's never, ever a time when the church says, you know what, we're going to go ahead and we're going to shut down for a month so everybody can take a break. People don't stop having heartaches. Prayer requests don't get put on hold. God doesn't say, I got another universe. All prayers, 2 weeks. Hang on, I'm going to go deal with them for a while. That doesn't happen. It just continues to go on. You and I step away. But the pressures of the church and the lives of the believers never goes away. Never. And I don't care how seasoned you are, I don't care how wonderful a pastor you are, there are times that just can crack a person. And you say something you wish you hadn't said. Or you're not there at a time that you look back, you wish you had been there. Because they're human. You've done it. So have I, right? We've done that. So how do I love a pastor in that situation? I don't even have to finish that sentence, do I? I can hand the mic around and every person can say, well, here's one for me. Well, here it is for me. There's that song, I love you just the way you are. Remember that song? You would if I sang it better, okay? That's another way to love your pastor. Figure out who he is. Figure out who she is. Love them for who they are. If God has called you to change them, he's probably not even going to tell you. He will use your love relationship and accomplish it without ever telling you what he's up to. Because that's how God works. Because if he does tell us, we tend to take credit. Just love him. If there's a need for change, God will take care of that. Unless, I will say this, unless you are the fourth person of the Trinity, then you have a special place in the church. Other than that, love covers all. Let me look at one more passage because I want to stop. 1 Thessalonians. That was the next one, so let's just take a look at that. 1 Thessalonians 5. Two verses. And then I'm going to ask you to make a commitment here in about 5 minutes, so get ready. 1 Thessalonians 5, verse 12. Here's the request. That we need you to appreciate those who work hard, who diligently labor among you, those who have charge over you in the Lord, those who give you instruction. So the first word I want to highlight there is appreciate. Now, don't answer out loud because I want to lead you now through a few questions here to the possibility of some practical commitments that you might make, applications. So here's my first question. And don't answer out loud, really. Here's my first question. Do you appreciate your pastor? All right, now I know the right answer is to say yes and on and on. And that's why I'm asking you just to now dialogue with me in your mind. Do you appreciate your pastor? If your argument, if your statement right now is yes, then let me ask you this. If we were to hold a court case tomorrow, and you were being tried as to whether you appreciate your pastor or not, what's your evidence? What evidence are you going to bring? And know that the judge is going to measure it by the inhale and exhale rule. He's going to measure it by, have you been obedient and submissive to your leadership in taking in? And have you been appreciative in exhaling and giving back? What evidence would you present? What evidence would you like to present? That might go on my list right now. So that when I hear Paul Simon saying, slip out the back, Jack. Make a new plan, Stan. I'm going, you know what? There's something on my list for how I love my 50 ways to love my pastor. Here's the ways. I have in a drawer in our home various notes and cards, some scribbled on napkins. Some of them go back as far as 30 years of little notes of encouragement that people wrote and gave to me through the years. I still have them. I still pull them out and read them. Half of the people who wrote those notes have already passed away. And yet those things still resonate and still bring encouragement to my heart. And there's very few things in there that are profound. They're just basic stuff that any of us could write. But they are tangible expressions of appreciation. How do you love your pastor? Appreciate them. Verse 13, and also esteem them very highly. Show them respect. Understand that what they face is not what you face. And their responsibility is a responsibility that you don't. And that's not to say that what a pastor does is any more difficult than what anybody else does, because all of our calls are equal calls to obedience. But I am saying that in the dynamics of the give and flow of a church body, if you decide to just sit down during the greeting time and not get up and shake hands and hug folks, not because you're mad, but you know what? Just today, I just would like to just sit down and not do it. Go ahead. I don't think many will notice. But if you are the pastor and you do that, do you think someone will notice? It's different. Yeah, it's different. The dynamic's different. And respecting that, understanding that, giving credit to where credit is due on that. Another way to love your pastor. So, second question I want to ask is, do you respect your pastor? And if we put you on trial, where's your evidence? And if you want to have more, then tell me what that is. In your mind, tell me what that is. And then exhale, do it. There's this afternoon, and there's tomorrow, and there's this week, and there's next month. If you're going to wait until Pastor Appreciation Month and the last day of Pastor Appreciation Month to show your respect and appreciation, do you know what day that is? Anybody know what month Pastor Appreciation Month is? October. You know what the last day of October is? Think about it. It would be a joke. I can appreciate you once a year as long as I have the mask on and you give me something. And let me close with this. Live in peace with one another. My oldest grandson is going into first grade. His teacher spent a lot of time this year trying to teach him not to tattle. Stop tattling. And they teach it in first grade and second grade and third grade. Stop tattling. And then I'm not sure where the line is, but somewhere in there, we get to middle school. And now it's the opposite. And now we're going to students and saying, tattle. What happened here? I'm not going to snitch. And that lesson that we taught them so well in kindergarten, first, second, third, they've taken that in, and now they won't ever tell anything. And they get to high school, and it's like everybody's perfect. No one's going to say a single thing. Well, when everybody tattles, that doesn't work. And when everybody holds the truth back and won't ever tell, that doesn't work either. And when we expect the teacher or the principal to come in and solve every problem between every student because they're tattle, 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 we know where that, how that is, right? Or if we're in a school of young teenagers who they never will tell the truth about anybody, they're not going to give up a friend, they're not going to snitch, now we have the opposite problem. We know what that experience is like. Inhale, exhale. There is a balance in that. If you're a tattletale, you're immature. I don't know any other way to say it. You're just being immature. And expecting spiritual leadership to come in and solve all the problems of your immaturity, that's not profitable for you. If you're at the opposite end and you're looking out for your buddies and you're never going to squeal on them and what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas, now, that's not going to turn out good either. The ability to speak the truth in love allows the body to care for itself, to coexist peacefully, even though we're different, so that the pastor isn't the principal who we constantly refer every problem to take care of and but rather the pastor is the shepherd, guiding the flock as they interact toward those green pastures, toward those still waters, toward a relationship with God that inhales and exhales in his love, loving God, loving our neighbor. There are many ways to love your pastor. My prayer for you this morning is that in just a few of these scriptures we've looked at, that the Spirit of God has been able to say, hey, hey, shh, shh, listen, that one, I want you to think about that one. That's for you. You don't have to be real public about it. In fact, if I could make a recommendation, don't be. I can tell you that sitting over there is a family who says, I just want to serve God. I don't want to be elevated. But you know what? Yeah. I do love you, and I would like you to love me. There are some people in this room today that love me, and about a year ago, I preached on the difference between loving and liking. Some of you might remember that, and there are people in here who have showed great love to me, and some of them don't like me, and I'm telling you, that is a tremendous gift, knowing that I can be Mike in all of my mistakes, all of my shortcomings, even if it's well-intended, the blunders, and that even though you don't like that, that you would still love me, there's no greater gift. And as a pastor leads and guides, he stumbles and bumbles and fumbles his way along. And there is no greater gift. Even when I don't like what he did, I don't like what he said, I love him anyway, and I make sure that he knows that because I exhale around him. I'm going to ask you to bow your head. I'm going to do two things right now. I'm going to give you a challenge, and then I'm going to close in a word of prayer. The challenge is this, and I am going to put you on the spot. I want to ask you, if you today want to look God in the eye, as it were, face to grace, look God in the eye, and say, I hear you, and I'm going to make a commitment to love my pastor with a new piece of evidence. I know I'm supposed to do that. I understand that's just as much of a commandment as any of the Ten Commandments. And no matter where I am on the scale, God, whether I'd get an A, B, C, D, or F today, I want to take a step forward in this. I want to tangibly love my pastor. If you're at that place where you're willing to stand, and I'm going to be standing to make that commitment, in a moment I'm going to ask you to stand, and then I'm going to pray. And I'm just going to ask God to lead us, not by peer pressure, but by the Spirit of God, just to love our pastor. So if you'd like to stand right now as a commitment to the Lord, I want to love my pastor better. I'm going to ask you to stand with me right now as I prepare to close in prayer. I'm not going to ask you to come forward. Just stand where you're at. Just as a tangible commitment to God and yourself. Father God, I thank you so much that you indeed love us with a love that is unfathomable. The riches can't be defined. That even while we were yet enemies, you sent your son, your only son, to die for us as an expression of that love. And then to go even further and say that as we take in that love, that you've designed it in a way where we are most fulfilled in it and blessed when we exhale and share that with others. We acknowledge that today as truth. And as we stand, we say to you in this one sliver of our responsibilities in the local church, this one single relationship, that we strive to take a step forward, each as individuals, in looking at a new, a refreshing way to love our pastor. We thank you for Jonathan and LaRana, their commitment, their sacrifices, their joy and compassion in serving as pastors here. And as they continue to move forward, we want them to do it in a way that is profitable for all, and that your name would be glorified, and that the ministry of this church would be known as a place where broken spirits come to be healed, where souls are saved, and where there is tangible evidence that we love you and we love one another. Send us out of here with a sense of practical plan of how to love you. We thank you for that love and for your grace. In Jesus' name, amen. Amen. God bless you.